Now, it's The Six with the Jeff Calkins Show.
Joined now by Neil McCready, publisher of RebelGirls.com. It's the Ole Miss team site for the Yahoo Rivals Network, host of the Oxford Exxon podcast, available wherever podcasts can be found, on Twitter at Neil McCready. The return of college football. It was no surprise yesterday that the NCAA voted to, let's be honest, they just do what the conferences tell them to now, right? Pretty much. Isn't that your understanding?
Yeah. You know, it's a real complicated topic on a lot of ways. I've had people push back against some things I've just said. I don't really have a strong opinion about it. The fact that they're coming back, allowing them to start coming back on June 1 is not indicative of, hey, we're just opening up the floodgates, we're going to make this happen. But you and I talked about this before, I think. If you're going to have a season that starts on time, or a season that, if you're even going to plan for the possibility that a season is going to start on time or close to on time, at some point the student athletes have to get back on the campuses. You do have to prepare for a season. There is a certain amount of protection for the players that has to be taken. And if they do this the right way in the month of June, they're bringing players back in waves, bringing them back over the course of a month. I know the leagues are begging the coaches, don't bring everybody back on June 1st. Don't bring everybody back at one time and create a problem. Do it, stagger it over the course of a month, and then in July you can assess where the state is, where the country is from a COVID standpoint, and then go from there. This allowed you to bring the players back starting June 1 through June 30th for conditioning and that type of thing, and also acclimation and testing and all of the stuff that has to be done before you can get to a point of playing a football season. So, you know, I didn't read a whole hell of a lot into what happened yesterday. There's some interesting things, like at Ole Miss, for example, and at a lot of schools, I think. Missouri is one of these schools, I know. They're letting student-athletes come back to campus and not take classes. There's no classes to take other than online, but they're not even going to take online classes. But they're still going to be allowed to get a room and board stipend, get a meal stipend so that they can afford to live on campus while they train for a football season. So they're student athletes, but they're not students. And it's a one-off. It's a COVID thing. I get it. I do think it's interesting because I wonder about precedent and slippery slope and some of those things. But, you know, the people that tell me I'm wrong tell me it's a one-off, and I'll take their word for it.
Of course, the problem with yesterday is, or with any of this, is that people, because this happens, people immediately just assume that they go from this happening, which is there might be five football players coming in on June 8th, right, to start a testing, let's reacclimate process, to we're going to have the Grove full of fans and fans on the first week of football. Like they assume that we're going to get from there to there from here. And there's a lot of steps from here to there, and everything has to go well in order to get from here to there. But immediately, even just psychologically, you saw a lot of stories yesterday. You know, you immediately see the Ohio State president talking about having 50,000 fans in the stands. And I'm sure they have to plan for that. They are planning for that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, this is all... I mean, it's the Mike Tyson quote. You can have a plan all you want, and the plan goes to hell the minute you're hit in the face. And the virus can hit you in the face, right? So everything sure has to go right to get to the next stage of the plan.
Yeah, if you're running a college football program or a athletics program or a university right now as it pertains to sports, you're not doing your job if you're not preparing for a multitude of scenarios. One would be a regular season. That seems unlikely today, but you're not doing your job if you're not preparing for it. You're also preparing for a season where your stadium is half full, a season where your stadium is a quarter full, a season where your stadium has no fans at all, a season that doesn't happen until the spring, a conference-only season, a split season. This is a pretty busy time to be in college athletics if you're doing it right. And so I don't, you know, it's funny, there's two extremes on this. There's the one side that even if you plan for something, you know, if you plan for a 50% stadium, you're disrespecting the virus. Or if you acknowledge that, hey, there's a possibility that the season doesn't happen in the fall at all, then you're being a fearmonger. No, if you're running a business, if you're running a school, you're running a football program, an athletics program, right now, you're having to prepare on May the 21st for a lot of eventualities, knowing that, let's say, on July the 21st, 2 months from today, you're going to know a lot more about what the landscape looks like, what the virus looks like or doesn't look like. There's going to be more information, more data that you're going to be able to assess and begin to say, okay, this is of my four or five scenarios. This scenario appears now today to be the more likely one, and you can begin to focus more on that. But, I mean, if you just sit back today and say, you know what, man, there's not going to be a season. This thing's going to run rampant over the course of the summer. We're not going to do anything. And then it doesn't, and you have to prepare for a season, you're screwed. And on the flip side, if you don't prepare for, hey, look, you know, we might have to 25% max capacity of our stadium. If you don't prepare for that, and then that's what comes about, well, you're not gonna handle that very well. So there's a lot that's happening behind the scenes, and frankly, I catch myself really disappointed in our field with some of the extreme coverage one way or the other. It drives me nuts.
What do you you obviously talk to medical people on your podcast and sure. elsewhere? What are you sort of gathering?
I think they feel like if you do it correctly, you can play football in the fall. I think they feel like it's more likely than not that you're going to have to socially distance the stadium to some degree. Medical people believe that there's some common sense that has to come into play. I think the smart medical people who don't appear to have an agenda will admit the words "I don't know" are part of the equation. It's a novel coronavirus. It means it's new. There's this assumption on some people's part that there's going to be a second wave. And then other people say, well, there won't be a second wave. There very well might be a second wave. It very well might burn out over the course of the summer. It might come back with a vengeance in the winter. It might not. And so, again, I think the medical people that are advising these universities and such are telling them, hey, you should prepare for all potential scenarios. You should have a plan in place.
What's it like at Oxford right now?
The town?
Yeah.
Oxford has reacted more strongly, I would say, than most. I mean, you know, you still have to wear a mask to go into any establishment.
Oh, you have to. You have to wear a mask to go into any establishment. That is not true in Memphis. That's an Oxford ordinance. You have to wear a mask to go into any establishment.
I was in Memphis Saturday, and I saw the sign that said, "We encourage you to wear a mask." And I was inside Trader Joe's, is where I was, and most of the people there were wearing a mask, but not all. In Oxford, to walk into the grocery store, to walk into a retail shop or anything, you must wear a mask. It's a requirement. There's a crazy restaurant ordinance that you have to wear the mask into the restaurant. Once you're seated, you can take the mask off because it's difficult to eat or drink with a mask on your mouth. But if you get up to go to the restroom or when you get up to leave the restaurant, you have to put the mask back on, which to me sort of feels somewhat arbitrary at that point. But, I don't know. Everybody reacts in different ways. There's still, I think, 30% of fire code is what you're allowed inside a store, inside an establishment, except for like Walmart and Kroger and places like that, which very frequently are just packed with people. I don't know, Jeff, the virus, there's not been, knock on wood, there's not been any sort of a breakout here. I think there's a strong desire on a lot of people to say, hey, this isn't as bad as we thought it was going to be, thank goodness, but let's get back to it. Let's open it back up. Let's get going. I know there's pressure on the mayor to open a lot of things up, and she, to her credit, regardless of how you feel, has steadfastly said what is in Oxford's best interest is to do everything possible in April, May, June, and July for August to be as normal here as possible. Because let's face it, this is a college town whose economic system is almost completely dependent on the University of Mississippi. And if the University of Mississippi can't function, and if there is no football, and therefore no men's basketball, and therefore no baseball, if in that nightmare of a scenario, a lot of, and I do mean a lot of businesses in this town don't make it.
Well, and that's the thing. To me, football, I want football to come back because I love football. But if football is back, I presume it means the university is back. And that is more significant, obviously, for all kinds of reasons than football being back. Having said that, what do you imagine? And I use the Grove as an example because there will be tailgating everywhere. What do you imagine they do in the Grove? Don't people have, like, let's say you have a socially distanced Grove. I've been there. It is not socially distanced. You would have to boot out half the tents. Don't have people have these spots? And no, it's a race. Well, how do people, like, how are they going to socially distance the Grove?
I asked that question this week and got an answer.
Oh, good. What's the answer?
Well, they're preparing, again, to their credit. I think they're taking it really seriously. They are preparing for all different scenarios. A closed Grove, a wide open Grove.
Closed mean you can't go to the Grove. That's a closed Grove?
Closed meaning they put a fence around it and lock it up and don't let anyone in it.
Okay.
Putting a fence around it and having four entrances that are manned where you count the people who are in and you count the people who are out, and it's 50% of, quote, capacity. A plan where it's 25% of capacity. Are you going to have a lot of really angry people? Yep. Are you going to have, would I want to be one of those security people that has to man those gates? Absolutely not.
Well,
I'm not sure you could pay me enough.
The Mississippi fan base, I can't believe, is one that is most endorsing of social distancing protocols.
Here's an example. I mean, I've heard numbers of, you know, and you could drive 20 minutes from here to Batesville, as you know, and you can go to Lowe's instead of Home Depot, for example, and they have grocery stores in Batesville as well.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of people who apparently have made the drive from Oxford to Batesville and because they don't want to wear a mask. They refuse to wear a mask. Wearing a mask is a violation of their civil rights, is their view. And so it's a pretty conservative state, as you know, and I'm not saying that is a good thing or a bad thing.
It's
or anything.
Just weird
it's just
that
a
this
fact.
Is a conservative or liberal issue. Like, why?
It is
it's
insane.
Just stupid.
It is. But, you know, stupid. We talked about this earlier. You see in the reaction to any stance, there's this, if you say, hey, you know, I want there to be football, so you hate your grandmother. No.
Or love if, my if grandmother say, so much. Also love football.
Say, yeah, if you say, you know, I really think we should take this thing more seriously, this virus more seriously, the opposite reaction is, oh, so you want the economy to burn down? Well, then, no. I mean, but those both of those extremes are there, and they're both equally guilty, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I've seen you're absolutely right. I've certainly seen lots of extremes on this one, but it'll be interesting. I mean, I the Grove will certainly be an interesting place, and I mean, the Grove is. Don't you think it is the Is it not America's tailgate? Like, if there is there a more quintessential college tailgate? And I don't even think this wasn't true 20 years ago. People didn't talk about the Grove as the best tailgating place in America, or the what is the example of what a, and it's the Grove, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, people talk about it a lot. You see, you know, when Ole Miss has a road game, when Ole Miss has a home game, you see a lot of people come from different places, especially if it's, you know, a non-conference game or an SEC East game where they don't come all the time. They come for the experience of the Grove and all of that stuff. It's really one of the questions I have about college football in general. When you talk about college football games with no crowds, no fans, which presumably would mean no bands and right. No cheerleaders and no mascots, and there's a part of me that wonders, is that really college football?
It's much more significant to college football than it is to pro. It's just
if you're telling me, hey, you're going to watch the Texans and the Bills play, right. I'm watching for the football game. If right. you tell me, hey, you're watching Alabama-Tennessee on Saturday afternoon, there's more to it than just the football
much
game.
More
I'm wanting to hear Rocky Top, and I'm wanting to see the Million Dollar Band, and I want to see the people in the stands and the colors and the pageantry. And that's why, I mean, you know, Jeffrey and I've talked about this. I mean, in NFL coverage, they don't take the studio on the road until the playoffs, really until the championship weekend. In college football, you've got college football game day, and then the SEC network has their own game day thing, and they do it week after week after week, which tells me they're getting ratings that make it worthwhile for them to send their people to all those places. And what are they covering? Now, they talk about football, but the stuff that they do all morning long is about the pageantry and the traditions and the cockaboose at South Carolina, or the flotilla on the river at Tennessee, or the Grove, or whatever. It's all of that stuff. And if you take all that stuff away, or if you minimize it to some serious degree, there is a part of me that wonders, once the first couple of weekends are done, do people go, you know what, this isn't really what I want to watch. It's not that entertaining. This is not the college football that I'm in love with. And now there's exceptions, and there's the people that bet on games and love football and they're junkies. But I'm talking about your mainstream average Joe guy. I kind of wonder.
Last question. What do you make of Tennessee's recruiting?
Jeremy Pruitt must be absolutely exceptional on a Zoom call.
He's got the Zoom thing figured out, man. Who would have imagined that he's the guy? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it just shows you that. I mean, you never judge a book by its cover. I mean,
Zoom,
if you had told
wizard.
Me,
yeah,
if you had told me going into the pandemic, you know, you said one coach is just going to dominate the Zoom circuit, Pruitt would not have been my first choice. But lo and behold, he apparently is an absolute social virtual wizard. And kudos, man. I mean, Tennessee is back. I'm there. It is. Those kids cannot wait to run through the tee and all that stuff. And it's just, it's obvious that the excitement in Knoxville is virtually off the charts right now. So kudos to them.
He is Neil McCready on Twitter at Neil McCready, publisher of rebelgrove.com. Listen to the Oxford Exxon podcast. It's available weekdays anywhere where podcasts can be found. Thanks, Neil, and happy Memorial Day to you and yours.
Thanks, Jeff. Same to you.
Yeah, that is Neil McCready. Isn't that interesting that Jeremy Pruitt, it's the Zoom thing. You know, I struggle a little bit with Zoom, but he's obviously very, very good at it.
There's no question. I mean, and, you know, maybe he's able to.
They say
to,
it's the lighting is a big part of it.
Huge
Where
aspect.
Your face is in the screen is a big part of it.
Maybe he's not using the built-in camera on his laptop. Maybe he's actually got, like, a real webcam, so he's able to. He doesn't have awkward angles to deal
with. He probably
uses
one of those backdrops, the fancy backdrops, right?
No question. You know?
The Jason and John Show.
He is Bill Bourne, where he covers the NFL for ESPN, and he joins us now. Hey, Bill, how are you? And appreciate the time.
Yeah, of course, guys. Hope you're staying safe, doing well.
Yeah, yes, everything everything Thank is you. Good here in Memphis. So, gonna ask for your raw reaction. Not sure if you've even seen this yet because it just came across, but NFL teams got some updated playing rules change proposals just a few minutes ago, and one of these proposals is an alternative to the onside kick that would allow a team a chance to maintain possession by going forward on 4th and 15 from their 25. And it sounds like the idea. Is the support for the idea is growing. What do you make of that? Do you like it as an alternative?
Love it. I love it. You know, you want to have options at the end of the game, right? Like, last couple of years, the onside kick has not been a viable option. That's no fun. You know, at the end of the day, I understand why the NFL wants to get rid of the onside kick, wants to, you know, keep players safe. And that's reasonable. I'm all for that. I think in the AAF, it was 4th and 12, if I'm not mistaken, so similar to that proposal. But, you know, 4th and 12, 4th and 15, either way, doesn't matter. I love the idea. Absolutely hope it gets passed. I think it adds more complexity and more strategy to the game. That's always a good thing.
I would imagine that the percentages would, I mean, I guess what would the threshold be, right? Because you want it to, I mean, 4th and 15 is going to be incredibly difficult to convert. So would the percentages, if you broke them out, like, how similar do you think they would be, a conversion rate of 4th and 15 versus, you know, recovering an onside kick?
I mean, it's not high. You know, you're looking at probably about a 5 to 10% chance, which is about right. You know, right? Like, you don't want to have it be too easy. You want to have, you know, have it to be difficult. You want it to happen once in a while, like an onside kick. But I think it's right around that range. Obviously, we'll see teams maybe get a little better at it because you'll practice for it. Maybe you'll have a 4th and 15 play as opposed to, you know, kind of just running whatever play you have on the playbook. But I do think we're going to see probably, if it gets played out probably something around 10% or so, which I think is right about what you want. You want it to be exciting, but not have too frequently that you think it's too easy.
I'm just curious, Bill, where you are today on May 21st in terms of what it's going to look like, right? What the NFL will look like this season. Do you think there'll be fans there? Will it be 15,000 like the Dolphins put out in the proposed plan? No fans at all? Sort of how have you envisioned it? A full season, shorter? What are you sort of thinking today in terms of the way it will look?
Yeah, I mean, anything I'm going to say is a guess, guys.
Sure.
I have to admit, we just don't know at this point. But to me, I think the most logical thing is no fans. I mean, we're seeing soccer leagues in Europe right now start up again with no fans. So the Bundesliga in Germany pop up with no fans. Is there really a benefit to having 5,000 fans as opposed to having no fans? I can't say. I think we're going to have to see what the options are. And I think there's going to be that unfairness thing, right, where you're going to have states who say, okay, we can't have any gatherings like that. Some states say, okay, we can have gatherings of 5,000 people in a 60,000 seat stadium. Is that an unfair advantage for those teams? I think the most even, fairest, playing ground is going to be no fans. And, unfortunately, that sinks. I want to have fans in the stadium. I think it's a much better product. It's tough, much tougher to watch without it. But I do think that's going to be, unfortunately, if I had to guess now, the likely scenario for what happens in 2020.
That's where I'm at with you today as well. All right, can the Titans, with the offseason they've had, can they do it again with Tannehill? Now, I'm not sure if he can be as productive, but can they have just as good a season as they did last year in terms of what they've done this offseason in your eyes?
I think so. I think it's definitely within the range of possibilities for sure. My biggest concern with Tannehill is health. I really think that's the one thing we're not talking about as much as we should be with Ryan Tannehill, a guy who before last year, and again, he didn't play a full season last year. Before last year, had not played a full season, I believe, since the 2015 campaign. We're talking about two torn ACLs and a nerve issue that cost him several weeks. And I think that's my only concern. I think Tannehill, when he plays, is an above-average quarterback, and I think he is a perfect, perfect fit for what they want to do on offense, as we saw last year. Your play-action game, getting Tannehill to get the ball out downfield. I think he is excellent at that, good arm. Still a pretty good athlete, maybe not the runner he might have been in years past, but still a mobile guy who can kind of get out on the edge if he needs to. But that's an offense where I think he has to be healthy for them to be effective because there's so little behind him. And I think that's the biggest concern is that, if you have – we've seen it in years past, right, with Marcus Mariota, where when he got hurt, it was Blaine Gabbert coming in to play that crucial Week 17 game.
Yep.
You don't want to be in that situation. So I think with Tennessee, I mean, that's my biggest concern. It's not just – not how Tannehill plays, not his level of play, but just his availability for a full 16-game season.
If you look at that division, Bill, who do you have the most confidence in? Is it still Houston, even without DeAndre Hopkins? Lord knows we've torn up Bill O'Brien this offseason. Is it Tennessee, or do you like the Colts with Phillip Rivers, or maybe it's Jackson? Who do you have the most confidence in is the way I'd ask that question.
Okay, I have the most confidence in Jacksonville tanking for Trevor Lawrence. That's my most confident thing, if I had to say. I mean, between those three teams, honestly, it depends on the day, realistically.
I hear you.
I think Tennessee, they have the most depth of any team in the league, and I think that is, or any team in the division, I think that's the plus for them is that they are a deeper team. They've been a team that has drafted and developed well, which I think is such a valuable thing. So you kind of have a little more faith in their draft picks coming through. With Houston, obviously, you can question Bill O'Brien, and everyone has. And at the end of the day, we're going to have to see. But a team that didn't have a first round pick this year, is missing draft picks from the past couple of years. I'm not the best quarterback in the division, I think it's fair to say, in Deshaun Watson. So that can be enough most weeks. And then with the Colts, we don't know what we have with Phillip Rivers.
Exactly.
I'm optimistic about Phillip Rivers' chances. I think he is someone who was kind of compromised by a bad line and, being in desperate situations, having to make some desperate throws in the second half last season, which cost him to throw a lot of interceptions. But he could just be toast. That's not out of the question either.
Yep.
So I think it's so up in the air relative to these three teams.
We are, of course, talking to Bill Barnwell, covers the NFL for ESPN. Up at ESPN.com right now on the front page, Bill has ranked the NFL off seasons. And for whatever reason, Tampa Bay's number one. Not sure what happened down there. But it's interesting in terms of, what it takes them to, the acquisition of Tom Brady. I was, when it happened, I was pretty confident that this took them from, a mediocre team to a real contender, not just in their division, but for a Super Bowl. Are you there? I mean, do you think they are a Super Bowl contender overnight with the acquisition of Tom Brady?
I do. I do think they are, and I'll tell you why. Because it's not only about Tom Brady and what he can do on offense, but how he can help the defense as well. So that defense last year at Tampa Bay, they ranked, I think, 30th in points allowed per game. We know that's bad. Here is the thing, though. They faced the most drives in all of football. They faced the worst average starting field position in all of football. And they were held responsible for 7 pick sixes that Jameis Winston threw when they were standing on the sidelines drinking Gatorade, which isn't fair to me. Look at the advanced metrics. Football Outsiders data, for example, the Football Outsiders website looks at, you know, kind of accounts for all that stuff. They were the 5th best defense in football by advanced metrics. So go from being 3rd worst to 5th best when you look at it from a play-by-play basis. But Tom Brady, now, you know, Tom Brady might not be the guy of old. I think that's fair to say. What I do know, Tom Brady is very good at protecting the football, not making mistakes, not turning the ball over. That defense is going to have such an easier time this year. They're going to face way fewer drives. The Patriots last year had the league's best average starting field possession on defense. Offenses had to go longer for touchdowns against the Patriots than anybody else. I think that's what Tom Brady's going to do, is just take this pressure off the defense. You know, they're going to be better on a play-by-play basis. And then I think you're going to have the offense where, you know, they're not going to be as explosive, but they're going to be more consistent, control the clock, make smart throws, move the ball down the field. I think it's going to be a balance that really works for them. So, yeah, I think absolutely. To me, they're a 10-11 win football team.
Mm. So an organization that did just about everything wrong last year and going 6-10 was the Cleveland Browns. You had them having the second-best offseason. It does. It feels like they've struck all the right notes. Will it come together, and how high can they jump in the AFC North, Bill?
I mean, you know, famous last words whenever you say something nice about the Browns, right? Never.
Don't miss the Jason and John Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.